Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning, we welcome back Stephen Wilson of LMU, Lincoln Memorial University in Harrogate, Tennessee. Good morning, Mr. Wilson. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Or Stephen, as you prefer. Because Mr. Wilson, which I think we've discussed before, is the guy next door on the Dennis the Menace show.
That's it. And yeah. I hear that enough. So Stephen is fine.
Now, Stephen, I'm excited that you're here because you are a scholar about Abraham Lincoln, a scholar of the great president, the 16th president. And there's so much stuff always happening at LMU that pertains directly to Lincoln's memory and honors him. In fact, I think a couple of years ago, you guys contacted me and gave me the opportunity to come see a replica of Lincoln's casket. And that was one of the more unusual exhibits you had on display at LMU.
That's true. We have about 50,000 artifacts in the collection. And then we generally create temporary exhibits about one every 14 months. So we have the encyclopedic exhibit, which is, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 square feet. And then the temporary exhibit is where we have a lot of fun just creating whatever we'd like to.
And the museum is right on campus there at LMU, and it sort of sits up to the front. It's easy to spot from the main road. And what are the hours? When is it open?
10 to 5 Monday through Friday, 12 to 5 on Saturday, and 1 to 5 on Sunday.
Yeah, I went in on a Sunday, my wife and I. We just saw you go through the story of Lincoln's life, you know, his early days, his presidential days. And then there was a whole section that time, one of the temporary exhibit had to do with the assassination, which was, you know, particularly fascinating for me to look at that and the funeral afterward.
Right. It's a broad subject, but it's also fascinating because it allows us to learn something about not only Lincoln, but the 19th century in general.
Yeah.
And then, as a matter of fact, the new exhibit we're working on takes us well into the 20th and 21st century, an examination of Abraham Lincoln.
And that's fascinating to me as well, because Lincoln's still obviously a relevant character in our national consciousness. I mean, from the mattress commercials where you see people dressed up in these ridiculous Lincoln costumes to just whatever. Every February, we remember Honest Abe and we talk about him. But you guys look at him in a more vital way. What are some of the things you've got going on currently at LMU?
We have, of course, the standard exhibit, the encyclopedic exhibit.
And by that you mean his life history.
His life history from 1809 to his assassination in 1865. And even after that, I guess his place as an icon in American history.
Mm-hmm.
But the temporary exhibit we have up now is Abraham Lincoln at the Movies. And it's fun for me because I've always had an interest in motion pictures. And in this particular case, we go from 1912, which is Birth of a Nation, to the current array of Lincoln films, including The Conspirator, Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, and probably the favorite's going to be Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Well, I have to admit, we are talking with Stephen Wilson of Lincoln Memorial University. I put something on Twitter about being excited about Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, and that was what caught the eye of the media department at LMU and said, hey, you should interview Stephen Wilson because he knows all about these movies and we got this great exhibit. So actually, it is Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter that has started this process, because I was so excited because two things. Number one, the movie opens on my birthday. So that's good news for me. Happy birthday to me. And number two, I am very upset with the trailer for this movie. Now, let me explain why. In the trailer for Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, it shows Abraham Lincoln killing vampires. I'm fine with that. What it also shows is a completed Washington Monument. And I said, fail! This is incorrect. This cannot stand. Because, as everyone knows, the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C. wasn't completed until many, many years after Lincoln's death.
That's true. It's amazing some of the liberties taken in history with our figures and our historic sites. And I saw that, too. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this can't be.
I had the benefit of living in the D.C. area for many years.
Well,
you don't have to get very close to the Washington Monument to notice a discernible difference in color from the bottom third and the top two thirds, because they just stopped building it. They ran out of money before the Civil War, and it stayed half finished throughout the entire Civil War and well after Lincoln passed.
That's true. I think what the producers are hoping for is you're going to be so busy watching Abraham Lincoln dispatch vampires that you don't care about anything else. But, you know, what's amazing about this whole story is it is a story of a dark period, and a melancholy individual, and all of it seems to be a look into the night of America during that period. And then, of course, he's jumping around with an axe, chopping off vampire heads and that sort of thing.
Now, I'm not familiar with the story. I guess it was a book first.
Right.
And I know there was. It's been kind of trendy lately to do Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, or Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters. Am I correct that the Abraham Lincoln and the Vampires is sort of in that same vein? Let's take something famous and add a modern day horror twist to it.
That's right. And as far as I understand it, it of course addresses the death of his mother, which is a historical incident. She died in 1818, and the death of Anne Rutledge, which supposedly just hurt him tremendously.
He and who was she? Like a girlfriend?
Anne Rutledge was, according to history, was a woman that he met in New Salem. Became engaged to. She dies at age, I don't know, 23, something like that. And he is so bereft over her death that he goes into a deep melancholy or deep depression. And his sister dies when he is something like, I guess, 18. She dies in childbirth. So we have these deaths on the frontier.
Okay.
And a normally somber individual anyway, who later on dresses in black. So here's all the ingredients of this flawed character who's fighting the minions of evil.
Okay. So then you throw in a couple of vampires into the story, and
you can't go wrong with vampires. Some vampires, zombies,
werewolves,
puppies, werewolves,
puppies,
puppy. Yeah, vampire puppies would be a perfect movie.
Puppies. Stephen Wilson of Lincoln Memorial University talking about the contemporary portrayals of Abraham Lincoln in the movies, such as Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Now you mentioned another one a few moments ago. The Conspirator, and I'm wondering if that's the one that I saw about Mary Surratt that was in the theater maybe about a year ago.
It is.
With Robin Wright
right.
as Mary Surratt.
That's correct. It was based on the trial of the conspirators after, of course, John Wilkes Booth is shot, after Lincoln is shot. And it traces her fight to gain her freedom and to escape the gallows.
Now,
Mary Surratt.
To get people caught up on where she played into the assassination of Lincoln, explain to us, you know, who she was and how she was related to Booth and the others.
Mary Surratt owned a boarding house in Washington, D.C., and it was the kind of a so-called unofficial headquarters of this group that came together under John Wilkes Booth. George Atzerodt, Lewis Powell, and these folks, including her own son, John Surratt. The original plan of action was to kidnap Lincoln and carry him south to trade for Confederate prisoners of war. On the morning of April 14th, 1865,
Good Friday,
Booth decided to shoot Lincoln instead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been a question of how much did she know, what role did she play? Now, we certainly know that she was aware of some sort of conspiracy, but Washington was full of conspiracies.
Yeah. The war had just ended.
Yeah, the war just ended. There were still a lot of hard feelings about the North. There were firearms secreted at the house. So what happened is this act of vengeance on the part of the federal government, including Stanton, Secretary of War, was simply to exact their pound of flesh from these so-called conspirators.
Mm-hmm.
And in her case, she was one of four that was hanged.
Because in the movie makes it as if, well, just because she owned the house where the conspiracy meetings were held, she may have been party to it. And it was kind of a big deal at that time for this country to execute a woman.
It was. She was the first woman hanged in U.S. history by the government.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I thought a pretty good movie. I mean, they tried to get a little preachy with it maybe and relate it to modern day politics in some areas. None of which I remember anymore. I just remember the allegories. I'm completely lost on me, but I remember the history part of it because I also read there was a couple of books about the details of Manhunt is the one that comes to mind.
Right.
The search for John Wilkes Booth. What about that book?
That book is very good. It does follow very closely what happened in the assassination. Even talks about the mad dash to collect souvenirs. After Lincoln passed away,
like what?
Parts of his coat, handkerchief contents of his pockets, his hat.
Really?
We actually ended up with one of those souvenirs, the walking stick he carried into Ford's Theater, which is in our collection.
Mm-hmm.
It also talks about this attempt to corner John Wilkes Booth someplace in either Maryland or Virginia. Now, everyone knew who shot Lincoln because he announced it when he jumped out of the presidential box.
And he was a celebrity. It'd be the equivalent of a Johnny Depp or somebody, you know, currently jumping out into a stage and committing a crime of that ill repute.
Absolutely right. And of course, in a way, John Wilkes Booth looked at this as his play, his morality play, in dispatching a tyrant, a despot, for his country, being the South, and
so when he yelled out, "Thus always to tyrants" in Latin, "Sic semper tyrannis," not only is it the motto on the Virginia state flag, a Confederate state, but it's also what they yelled out when in Shakespeare when Caesar was killed, right?
I'm not
or
sure
something
about
similar,
that.
Or something,
yeah, something
like that.
But certainly, what John Wilkes Booth was saying is, "I have killed the tyrant. I am the hero. I am the savior of the nation." And candidly, at that particular time, the South didn't care. They were too busy trying to save their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
He flies into Maryland with David
Harold. Yeah, he expected a hero's welcome.
He did.
And he got nothing.
Nothing at all.
Yeah.
In his day journal, he talks about that he's not recognized as the savior of his nation. So.
Yeah. So he ended up basically camping out with a broken leg for a couple of weeks, probably just absolutely miserable as he tried to work his way south. And then ended up getting hunted down, as the book describes, manhunt. And I wonder if they'll make a movie or a TV movie out of that.
I heard someplace that there was going to be a movie made from that, a television movie. I don't know for sure. There's a lot of projects that were in development. And even for a while, it looked like Steven Spielberg's film was not going to be made.
Oh, I do want to ask about that next. We are talking with Stephen Wilson, who is the curator at the Lincoln Museum at the Lincoln Memorial University in Harrogate, which is just this close to Kentucky. Birthplace of Lincoln, right?
We're close. We can. As a matter of fact, I can see the Cumberland Gap, the pinnacle, from my office window.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it is a beautiful place to go. Just take a Sunday drive or whenever you want to get up there and enjoy the museum. It's a nice time. But now we've heard about the Steven Spielberg. Those of us who follow movies and those of us especially who have interest in history, have heard about Steven Spielberg wanting to make a Lincoln movie for a long time because supposedly he was in our region scouting locations, and this has been going on for years. We've heard, someone said they saw Spielberg, or someone's going to get Tom Hanks or Daniel Day-Lewis, or they just all these names get thrown around. That's the way it works. What do you know about the Lincoln movie? What's the story on that?
Well, I would like to say that Spielberg and I were in close communication about this, but that would be a lie, and I don't want to lie on the radio.
Especially on Easter Sunday.
That's right. What yeah. I know about it is it's based on the book. Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Okay.
And it looks at not only Lincoln, who has to be a strong figure, character certainly in his own cabinet, but the other members of his cabinet who are equally strong and equally ambitious. So his role is going to be to keep these guys pretty much in line and run a war and build an army. So it shows his skills, but it shows...
So there was a bit of a power play with the cabinet, especially with Secretary of War Stanton.
Seward and Chase were definitely three who felt that Lincoln was certainly incapable of being president.
Okay, so Stanton was Secretary of War. Seward was Secretary of State?
Correct.
And he ended up getting slashed in the night of the assassination.
That's correct.
He got stabbed.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Salmon P. Chase, I don't know who that is, but because I know there's someone on the money named Salmon P. Chase, I'm going to guess it's the same guy. I'm going to guess maybe he's Secretary of Treasury.
That's absolutely correct. You get an A for that.
Well, if I were on Jeopardy, that's what I would be doing. It would be a total guess. I would be writing down, who is Salmon P. Chase?
He was probably the most ambitious man in Washington, D.C., and he felt he should be the president. And he constantly worked against Lincoln to secure that office and to undermine Lincoln's role in the Republican Party.
How ironic that the Secret Service comes under the Secretary of Treasury. You see, because Lincoln got shot before there was a Secret Service.
And even his own guard left his post. But that was there's all sorts of circumstances that seem to collide around the death of Abraham Lincoln.
Well, of course, he was the first president assassinated, so I don't think his contemporaries were as suspicious or as on guard or even thinking that it might happen because it hadn't happened before.
That's true. And Lincoln himself, was not all that crazy about having guards around him or anything. He used to ride out to the soldier's home, which is 3 miles from the executive mansion, alone, unattended. He'd go out walking across the lawn of the executive mansion to the War Department, rather large area, unattended. Mm-hmm. He just didn't think about these sorts of things.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
And it's unfortunate, too.
Yes. Well, although it did kind of... all right, let me ask this, Stephen Wilson of the Lincoln Memorial University Museum. By being assassinated, did that sort of cement his place in history as a martyr? I mean, what would have happened had Lincoln survived? How would his memory be different for us today?
I think that's an excellent question.
That's a PhD question.
It is. And the truth of the matter is, how he would have survived after the war and the struggle over reunification of the two parts of the country and Reconstruction is anybody's guess, because the Radical Republicans, certainly in the Congress, wanted to see the South absolutely punished.
Mm-hmm.
The people in the South who did not want to be reunited would have worked against that.
Yeah.
And so whether Lincoln could have reunited the country in some sort of comprehensive means to secure the Union, I don't know. The war was very, in other words, war aims or war goals were very apparent. Defeat the enemy.
All right, so Lincoln's successor is his vice president, who becomes president, is a Tennessean.
That's right.
So a Southerner, how did that affect history?
Not well. Andrew Johnson was described as a self-made man who gave too much credit to his own maker.
Uh-huh.
He could be contentious, willful, difficult along with suspicious.
Yeah,
and he created an enemy of Congress and of his own cabinet in a very short period of time. So he had no one to work with. He didn't have the political wherewithal that Lincoln had. Lincoln was a superb politician.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson was, and this may be a little harsh to say, but he was kind of like a bully in the White House.
I do hope to someday in the relatively near future get to the Johnson Birthplace Museum in Greenville. But I also got to take my wife to the Andrew Jackson Museum in Nashville. I haven't done that yet either, so I got to work on both of those.
Those are both fantastic locations.
When you said Lincoln was a superb politician, I guess obviously he was, but I never thought of it that way. What is it that made Abraham Lincoln a superb politician?
He had a very analytical mind. He also was a close, as some people say, a close reasoner of the human condition. He understood people. He understood people's aims. He did not hold a grudge. He would not let his emotions, his temperament, overwhelm his good
like
judgment.
You can't please all the people all the time. What's that quote? Because it's so perfect.
Something like
you can please some of the people
some
of the
time.
Yeah.
And some of the people all the time, but not all the people all the time.
Right.
And his ability, I think, to understand human nature and what people wanted gave him the capability to be one of the best politicians in the 19th century.
Does that go back to the Lincoln-Douglas debates then? I mean, because that's something we've learned about, of course, in high school, is that how this someone who we think today it would be too unattractive, too lanky, too with a high-pitched, whiny voice we've heard that Lincoln had. They say there's no way he could get elected in the television age, yet what won it for him was his debating skills against the well-known Stephen Douglas at the time, who's now barely a footnote in history. Most people barely remember him.
Well, if you put all the parts of Lincoln's character together, he was 6'4", gawky, awkward, high, as you pointed out, a high-pitched, shrill voice.
Mm-hmm. Which vampires hated.
Yeah, I know. They can't stand that sort of stuff. That and axes and stakes. The thing about it is with Lincoln is he grew on people and won them over with his ability to analyze situations, his basic integrity, and the fact that he not only was called honest Abe, but behaved in an honest fashion.
Mm.
When he went east and spoke at the Cooper Union in New York City, he won over the reporters because they
walked the walk.
Yeah,
he didn't
really
just talk
did.
The talk. He walked
he really
the walk.
Did, yeah.
Wow. All right. So we're talking about the new exhibit at the Lincoln Museum at the Lincoln Memorial University in Harrogate. It's Abraham Lincoln in the movies.
Right.
And I'm thinking I've probably seen more of these than I really remembered, because you're talking about Birth of a Nation. I wasn't born in 1919, surprise. But it's one of those ones that they made us watch in high school. So I'm familiar with that one.
Okay.
I'm thinking there's Henry Fonda, there's Raymond Massey, there's all these other the type of black and white movies that they used to show when I was a kid. This is what would be on President's Day weekend. You'd watch all these old Lincoln movies on some low rent UHF channel. Well, so tell us about some of those other older films that were about the life of Lincoln, too.
Well, not only do we have films, we also have commercials and cartoons. You have the Geico commercial, of course, and a lot of cartoons about Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
You know, there's something like...
Political cartoons or
no,
just comic
cartoon
strips?
Cartoons, yeah, just from Family Guy and other things, commercials about Lincoln, excerpts from Young Mr. Lincoln, Abe Lincoln in Illinois, scripts, the working script from Abe Lincoln in Illinois. As a matter of fact, that film was premiered on, or in 1940, on the campus of Lincoln Memorial University in Southern Premier.
Really?
Yeah. So we have Raymond Massey on campus with Herbert Hoover. And the other films, we have Walter Houston as Abraham Lincoln, Henry Fonda, as you pointed out, as Abraham Lincoln. Believe it or not, Hulk Hogan provided the voice for Abraham Lincoln.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Let me throw one at you. If it's not in your collection, I hope maybe you can get it. There was a show, I think it's MTV for a few years, called Clone High. This was fun. The premise of this was they had all these dead historical figures who had somehow been cloned, and they all now were the same age, and they all went to high school together. Okay, it's hysterical, because you've got JFK and Lincoln are like rivals, competing for the attention of, you know, young Marilyn Monroe and these other people. It's very, it sounds ridiculous, but a lot of the voice actors came from Saturday Night Live. I think Will Forte might have played Lincoln. So it's worth looking up. Clone High is the name of it.
I will find that
one, because that is good stuff. I think it would fit in with your display.
That sounds great. I mean, it's really fascinating. We do have, I'm proud to say, a real-life vampire chained in the upstairs gallery. That's a lie. There are more. See, if I were Abraham Lincoln,
April
I would
Fool's
not be
last
honest.
April Fool's last all month when you're talking to Stephen.
No vampires in the galleries. I'm afraid that. No, it's really fun, because I grew up in movie houses when I was like 4 or 5 years old. So to see these films and to understand the character and all the people that made the films, it's a hoot for me.
Another movie that I like, and this is going to sound stupid, but I have a soft spot for time travel movies. There's something about them that amuse me. So, yeah. You know, Back to the Future type of stuff. But there's something about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure that I've long been fascinated with this concept of what would Lincoln and Benjamin Franklin, for some reason, those are the two that I'm fascinated with. What would those guys think if you took them out of the 18th and 19th centuries and put them here today? So let me throw that at you. You have an opportunity to time travel to your Bill, your Ted. You can be whichever one you want.
Okay.
And I'll be the other one, because I don't remember which one was Keanu. So you take them and you time travel Lincoln to the modern day. What would you say to him? How would you explain all of this stuff to Lincoln?
Well, it's an interesting question. As a matter of fact, we have an excerpt from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, as well as the Star Trek, where Kirk meets Lincoln.
Oh, yes, and he has the opportunity to
stop
the assassination, or he thinks he does.
The thing about it is, with Lincoln, he is so fascinated, or was so fascinated by mechanics and technology. He would probably, if he was standing here right now, he'd probably be picking at the microphone and the screens and looking around all over the place.
Yeah.
Just mesmerized by this array of technology.
Yeah.
Because he was the only U.S. president to hold a U.S. patent for an invention.
What did he invent?
He invented a device to lift riverboats over shallow river shoals in the West.
Really?
So, you know, the mechanics of the whole thing.
So he's a lawyer.
Lawyer.
An inventor.
Inventor, poet, surveyor, postmaster, storekeeper.
Wow.
And anything you can think of, yeah.
So he would just be so curious and so interested in whatever you could describe to him in our modern day.
I think so. As a matter of fact, when he went on the circuit with his friends, they would oftentimes lose him. He would be on farms looking at things like McCormick reapers and plows, and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that.
All right. Now, obviously, Lincoln was shot on Good Friday, on Easter weekend of 1865. And when I came up to see your exhibit about the funeral of Lincoln, I guess it was either there or I probably did some reading at the same time. I learned that it was Abraham Lincoln who popularized embalming in America, because everyone said, oh, look at that. Because they took Lincoln's corpse on this, you know, tour of the country. And he was one of the first celebrities to be embalmed. And other people said, well, he's good enough for Abe Lincoln. I want to get embalmed too. So really, he changed the funeral industry, and I probably learned that from one of my funeral books more so than your exhibit. But tell me a little bit about the after the death of Lincoln, going back to that exhibit that you guys had a few years ago.
Well, one of the questions was what to do with Lincoln's body. And, of course, he's going to be traveling. The body's going to be traveling from Washington, D.C. back to Springfield and stopping 11 separate times. They call it 11 separate funerals, but stopping 11 separate times. So one of the things they had to make sure is his body survived the trip, his body and Willie's body. Willie was on the train, too.
Willie, so his son, who had died in D.C. a few years earlier.
Yeah, in 1862.
So they exhumed Willie?
Right. So
oh,
Willie's
wow.
traveling with Lincoln's body, and there has to be a team of undertakers there to make sure the body does not deteriorate and have it made up so people could actually view the body. Now, there had been a whole industry on the battlefield during the Civil War with embalming.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you try and embalm a body that's usually distressed from the rigors of battle, you have
embalming fluid would leak out the hole.
Yeah, it leaked down, So you have a different situation.
Sorry to gross you out, everybody. But that's
no, and I've got zombies in the galleries. I mentioned zombies in the
paper.
Yeah, we got real live zombies. See me about 4 o'clock in the morning without coffee, and you'll see a zombie. in any case, it's Lincoln's body becomes a whole ceremony. Becomes a whole ritual. And from this, you see the advent of more and more allowed to the carrying of the bodies, the ritual surrounding death.
Mm-hmm. And you had the replica of the casket. And help me pronounce that word, the catafalque.
It's called a catafalque, and it took me about 3 years to learn how to say it. Yeah,
I still
can't
don't know.
Spell it.
Catafalque, okay.
Catafalque, it's a platform on which the coffin a lie and was a canopy with black crepe and white crepe, the combination for mourning.
98 years later, when Kennedy was assassinated, they basically took out the playbook, the rule, and copied many of the rituals from Lincoln's funeral for Kennedy's funeral,
absolutely.
Including, I think they used that same space to rest the casket on.
They did. They used the same catafalque, and I think it's been used since that period. I can't tell you exactly how it was used, but I think it was used since a period.
That is amazing. We're talking with Stephen Wilson. The Lincoln Memorial University has this great museum up in Harrogate. You should go check it out and get a chance to maybe meet Stephen and find out more about Abe Lincoln. We're running out of time, but the new exhibit is Abe Lincoln in the Movies. Any other movies I've left out or any other any stuff that I've left out? Because, you know, I can't squeeze it all into half an hour.
No, I think you've done a great job. We have a vast array of artifacts. We certainly have a lot of fun in the films that we're doing. You can actually have your picture taken as Lincoln in a $5 bill. We have a question and answer area where you can ask or answer questions about Lincoln in the movies or some aspect of Lincoln's life. So come and have fun. Enjoy yourselves.
Oh, that sounds terrific. Well, it is worth it. I do recommend going and visiting the museum. Make a day of it. It's a nice time. And also maybe watch some of these movies. You know, look them up and enjoy the different portrayals of Lincoln throughout the years. Any other cartoons that you mentioned or comics?
Oh, gosh.
I'm thinking probably like a Bugs Bunny or somebody would dress up as Lincoln or you know, all throughout the course of history. He's just been such an icon. You can always go to Lincoln. You should put on the hat, put on the beard. Oh, that's what else I was going to ask you. I've been to Ford's Theater, and they sold, you know, good little Lincoln costumes, hats, and the fake beards and stuff like this. I guess I was appalled, but when Gettysburg National Park had a gift shop up there, and some reporter walks in and realizes that they're selling John Wilkes Booth bobbleheads in the gift shop at Gettysburg. Now, it wasn't Ford's Theater, which would have been 10 times worse, but really? That's kind of tacky, you gotta say. If you're at Gettysburg and they're selling John Wilkes Booth bobbleheads instead of, you know, in addition, side by side with the Lincoln bobbleheads?
No, I can't see it. I can honestly say that you will not find John Wilkes Booth bobbleheads at the Abraham Lincoln Library Museum.
All right, good.
Categorically.
All right. What other souvenirs do you have, though?
Oh, gosh. We've got the beards. We've got the hats. We have bonnets. We have lots of books, including one of my books.
What's it called?
President Lincoln's Spy is one of them. President Lincoln's Secret is another one. And just
Are these nonfiction or fiction?
These are fiction historical novels.
Okay.
So I think you'll be impressed.
I think it'd be worth a read.
Yeah.
All right. It's Stephen Wilson, Lincoln Memorial University. I'm delighted. Another stop that I'm planning to make in the near future is Springfield, Illinois. I've got to get to that.
Oh, yeah. You'll love that.
Lincoln headquarters there. It's one of the one of my next stops. But I seem to just get to D.C. more than anywhere else of all these various Lincoln places. I appreciate your time. We recommend that you go check out the new exhibit, Abraham Lincoln in the Movies, and then enjoy Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, coming June 22nd to a theater near you. We should go together. I want to see your reaction.
Yeah. I'll buy the popcorn.
Oh, well, you know what? The AARP, I get a half-price popcorn.
Oh, great. Okay.
All right. So anyway, this is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.